take her out the picture, would he still be living? So, she was the main cause.
And he was gonna go on a date. He just thought he was going on a date. About to go on a date.
Good morning to you
everybody.
All. I feel so bad for you, Jennifer. I know this started January 23rd, first period science class, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
First, it's kind of funny. It's not funny, is
not
it?
Not no more, it's not.
No.
Not at all.
Well, if you have a cure for the hiccups, she needs you. She's hiccuping 24 hours a day.
Tonight, from media sensation to murderer.
If we take the facts as truth, she lured a guy under false pretenses and he wound up dead. Lock her up. That's it.
What do you feel like to be called a murderer?
And it's like, damn. Why did I do what I did? Why did I hang out with the people that I hung out with? Why did I do this and why did I do that? And now I will carry this title for the rest of my life.
Well, you'll carry two titles. You know, you were the hiccup girl, and now you're the murderer.
I'll never forget it. When I first came on this compound, I had a lady actually tell me, she was like, aren't you the hiccup killer? And I just looked at her like, and I just kept going, because there's no justifying to what took place that night.
I have a free call from
Jennifer, me.
An inmate at Pinellas County Jail.
Hi, Mama.
Hello, Jennifer. What's going on?
I'm in jail.
Why are you in jail?
For murder in the first degree.
Who'd you kill?
I ain't killed nobody.
Well, then how are they charging you with murder?
Because I set everything up.
Who are you trying to kill, Jennifer?
Nobody. It wasn't even supposed to happen like that, Mom. Mom.
What?
Call you when I can because I gotta go. Mommy, try to make visitation, please.
All right, Jennifer, I love you.
I love you too, Mom.
We're learning now more about the murder arrest of the Florida teenager who gained fame for her persistent case of hiccups.
This case can be seen as a tragedy on several levels, certainly for the family of the victim, also for Jennifer Mee's family.
I'm worried about my daughter right now, and I'd like some privacy.
Jennifer Mee's mother seems stunned by the murder charge facing her daughter.
Can you tell me what your family's going through right now, ma'am?
I'm going through hell.
America was gripped by the unfolding story of the so-called hiccup girl, now charged with murder. I was heading to the crime scene with Dave Wozinski, the lead homicide detective on the case and one of the first to arrive here that night. The victim was 22-year-old Shannon Griffin, a talented high school footballer who had moved here from Mississippi. He thought he was going on a date with Jennifer, but she and her accomplices had other ideas.
When you got here, what was your gut reaction about what may have happened?
We're really close to downtown, and on a Saturday night, it wouldn't be uncommon for someone to come downtown to possibly look for narcotics or something have gone wrong during a narcotic exchange. So you start in your mind, you start thinking, okay, this is either a drug deal that went bad or a robbery that went bad.
Were you, to start with, of the belief that Jennifer Mee was involved, or did you think that she was just the girlfriend of one of the guys who died?
We had her come to the station, and then very quickly, based upon the interviews that we did, it became very apparent that she was involved. She was the prime person who contacted the victim, who was Shannon Griffin. She contacted him. She brought him down here. She lured him here, and they were all going to try to get some money from him.
Do you think that he thought he was coming on some kind of date?
I think he thought he was coming to meet a girl, that it was going to be a social activity, and possibly a small amount of marijuana was going to be sold. But I think that based upon the way he was dressed and the conversation that he had with his family before leaving, number one, he was coming to meet a girl. That shouldn't be a death sentence.
please. Everybody in the jail, please stand. Raise your right hand to receive the oath.
Jennifer Mee. Hi, Ms. Mee. The allegation is murder in the first degree. I do find probable cause. Your bond is currently zero. Can you afford a lawyer to help you? All right, I'll appoint a lawyer to represent you.
What fascinated America was this basic question. Even though Jennifer didn't pull the trigger, had this seemingly innocent teenager knowingly lured a man to his death? Jennifer is currently serving a life sentence with little possibility of ever being released.
Jennifer, how are you?
Good, how are you, sir?
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Come with us.
I've been granted an hour with the hiccup girl.
Just this way. This a prison tattoo?
Yeah.
What is it?
JDD.
Who does that in there?
I'm not allowed to talk about that.
Oh, you're not?
No.
Oh. It's just someone does it, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. This guy, Shannon, he's a nice guy. You know, he came to the area from Katrina, where the hurricane had decimated so many lives. He, like so many people, was attracted initially to you because you were famous. You were the hiccup girl.
I could say that then, most likely, yeah. Because back then, a lot of people befriended me because of the name that I had gotten and, of course, the 15 minutes of fame. You know what I mean, so.
What is your motivation for interacting with him?
At that time, it was to sell drugs. I didn't know nothing more, nothing less of the situation that ended up occurring.
He thinks he's on a date. He tells his cousin he's going on a date.
See, and when I heard that, I was blown by it because last I knew, he was buying marijuana. I didn't know nothing about no date.
We know made himself look very smart that night. He put on cologne. He told his cousin he was going on a date. He clearly had been led to believe by you that this was perhaps partly to get some marijuana, but also to have a date with you. Had you given him any reason to think that?
Not that I can remember, to tell you the truth. I don't remember, like, 100% facts of what really led up to everything that night.
I mean, I suppose, Jennifer, what I would say is you're not stupid.
No.
I can tell you're not stupid. You're street smart. It seems very odd to me that you can't remember such critical parts of this, because obviously the only reason Shannon is dead is because you lured him to a situation where he ends up dying. And so I would have thought that your brain, especially sitting here for the rest of your life, that your brain would think all the time about the sequence of events, and yet you seem incredibly vague.
Take her out the picture, would he still be living? So, she was the main cause.
Can't ever accept her being called a murderer. I know what her conviction was, but I also know who she is as a person.
On that night, Jennifer Mee had contacted Shannon Griffin for the purposes of bringing him to downtown St. Petersburg so that they could conduct a drug transaction. Part of that conversation would have possibly included a date with Jennifer Mee. Mr. Griffin gets dressed up in new clothes, puts on cologne, rides his motor scooter to the area. He meets with Jennifer Mee in the front alleyway of a house that was for sale. She indicates that the people that sell them the marijuana are located down the alleyway. He is confronted by Lamont Newton and Mr. LaRon Rayford. They probably ask for his money. A struggle ensued where a gun was pulled.
It's obvious there was a pretty good physical struggle that happened. It seems to me that Shannon was winning. That's probably the decision at that point when you're starting to lose a fight. One of the problems with bringing a gun to a fight is then now what do you do?
In Florida, if you commit a robbery and somebody dies, everyone involved can be charged with murder. Which might explain why Jennifer didn't mention the robbery in her first police interview.
Hello, this is Detective Gary Gibson. It's Sunday, 10/24/2010. With me is Jennifer Mee. We're talking about a homicide that occurred last night. Who was the aggressor?
I don't know what those.
Who is the one upset?
When LaRon found out that he had some type of relation going on with his girlfriend, LaRon snapped, grabbed the man up, choked him, and pulled the gun out of the book bag and put it to the man's head and told the man not to say anything and brought the man to the back of the house and shot and killed him.
In police audio recordings, Jennifer is heard giving two versions of what took place that night. First, she says the shooting was part of a love triangle involving the victim, Shannon Griffin, one of the suspects, LaRon.
Why did you lie?
I was afraid. I'm not even going to lie. I was afraid. When I started, like, thinking about everything, I was like, oh, my goodness, I could possibly be going to prison for the rest of my life, because I know in the state of Florida, if you are charged with, I forget what they call it, principal or something like that, you're just as guilty as a person that has pulled the trigger.
I mean, this is an unbelievable moment. You're a 19-year-old girl, no criminal record. You're with other people who, although they're a bit dodgy, also have no criminal records. And suddenly you're facing life without parole for first-degree murder.
It was mind-blowing. It was mind-blowing because in my mind, I was like, how could I be so young and dumb and naive to fall into a trap so easily, so to speak? Why couldn't I ever just have stayed home? Why couldn't I have been a good daughter? Why did I want to do my own thing? Why did I not want to listen?
I've seen her cry at the verdict, and I've seen her cry at the sentencing, but I don't confuse those with being remorseful as to her actions.
She is a very lovable little girl, but unfortunately she's very impressionable and she likes to do things to make her friends happy.
Jennifer's mother and sisters had agreed to meet me. They've moved to Tennessee, but today they're back in Florida and had just made a rare visit to see her in prison.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you as
well.
Nice
to see you. Hi there. I'm Piers. Good to see you. Hello. 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 Oh, she doesn't seem very happy. I'm Piers. Good to see you. So you've just been to the prison, I hear, to see Jennifer. How was that for you guys, her little sisters?
Emotional.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How often have you actually physically been able to see her?
Like 6 times since we moved.
It's very hard for her, of course, when you all leave.
She cries a lot whenever we leave.
What do you feel about what happened to her?
That it wasn't fair.
Why?
Because I feel like she was sentenced too long.
And in different states, you wouldn't get that long, and different people wouldn't get that much.
I mean, you knew her better than most people.
Yeah.
And to lure a guy that she didn't know through social media.
She followed what other people wanted her to follow, and if she was by herself or with her family, she wouldn't ever do anything like that.
She was much different when she was around us, but when she was with her partner, her friends or her partner, she was just a completely different person. She just acted all big and bad and just tried to stick out.
What kind of girl was Jennifer when she was growing up?
She was always very happy, always wanted to be the little mother to her younger siblings. She helped me in so many ways with her sisters growing up, whether it be getting a bottle for them when they were very young, to wanting to read stories to them when she could read herself, and just a joy to be around.
Was she well behaved?
Always, until we moved to Florida and she started being in an area where you know, she became a teenager and things were a lot different from where we lived in a very small town in Vermont. She started wanting to explore. She started getting a little bit rebellious because her and her stepdad didn't always see eye to eye. That kind of brings us to where she had the hiccups and it got a little bit worse because she felt like, you know, who are you to tell me what to do? Do you know who I am? Type attitude towards her stepfather.
Can you believe that Jennifer got herself into a situation where she would lure somebody she didn't know on the internet for at the very least a beating?
I find it very hard to believe, and I do know that it happened. I don't believe that she was the mastermind, as people called her, behind that. I've been told that it was the guys trying to get her to do that, and she just basically went along as a bait, if you will. Jennifer on her own, I don't believe, would ever do anything like that.
Have you ever tried to contact the family of Shannon?
I talked to her during the trial, his mom, and told her that I would basically give any limb in my body to have things change from what happened that night. Gave her a hug, told her how sorry I was.
And she knew who you were, obviously.
During trial, we were in the cafeteria.
Did she say anything to you when you did that?
Just gave me a hug, and really, what can you say?
The murder victim, Shannon Griffin, had grown up here in Petal, Mississippi, which had been hard hit by Hurricane Katrina. At school, he was passionate about football and was an outstanding player.
I would hope that he fought for his life. I would hope that that his family and his coaches and his peers had instilled in him that want to live and that fight.
They couldn't have did it without a gun, because he was that tough.
It's just a waste of Shannon's life, of course, and of the three people that were involved as well.
Yeah.
It's a waste of their lives.
Even today, his grandmother's still dealing with it, because when I talked to her about it a couple days ago, she just broke out in tears. She haven't got over it yet. She's still suffering the loss. And it'll probably be with her the rest of her life. She can't even talk about it anymore. That's how hurt she are.
Do you accept that if you hadn't lured him that night in the way that you did, that he'd still be alive?
I don't know. I don't know what you mean by...
Well, let me spell it out for you. You were the one that he contacted on the social network site. You were the one that encouraged him to come over, knowing he was at the very best going to get a beating and be robbed. So you had all the power here. You're the person he knows, albeit just through a social network page. So you had the power to either lure him to what happened or not.
Sometimes I wish I would have been more I don't know what the proper word to use is, more, I don't want to say open-minded, but more alerted to the situation.
More of a decent human being, Jennifer. I mean, let's be brutally honest here. At the time, you were doing loads of drugs, you were selling loads of drugs. You know, it's a descent into a pretty dark kind of life. There's a gun, and then this guy gets sucked into this, and the gun ends up being used to kill him. This is not a world of, I wouldn't hurt a fly. This is a world of, you come into this world, something bad's gonna happen to you.
I mean, people have their own opinions. It is what it is, but also at the same time, he didn't deserve to die. He didn't. And you know,
what I'm trying to get inside is how much responsibility you're prepared to take. Like, you're serving life without parole. As things stand, you'll never come out of here, right? You've nothing to lose by being completely honest about this. And I hear you saying, I'd never heard a fly, everybody knows that. Mm. And then I also hear you say, yeah, I got this guy over and he was going to get beaten up, he was going to get robbed. That doesn't sit very easily with, I wouldn't hurt a fly.
I understand what you're saying, but also in the same perspective of everything is when somebody tells me they want weed, I tell my co-defendant, the one that does deal with the weed, listen, somebody wants weed. Okay, tell him, I have the weed. Tell him I have the weed and we'll meet. Okay, that's what I do.
You introduce him to the two guys and then you disappear. Why do you disappear?
Because I thought they were going to just, I don't want to say beat him up because it was two against one, you know what I mean? Not both of my co-defendants aren't like big guys, you know what I mean? But for one dude, you know what I mean? I thought they could, get what they were going to get from him and then go on about their business.
But get that how? By physically dealing with him?
Yeah, not, trying to kill him. Because who would want, now this is how I think, why would somebody want to kill somebody over whatever, how much a half ounce of weed is, what, $55 or something like that, $55 or $60. Why would somebody want to kill somebody over that? I still, to this day, I don't understand that.
He was killed because he put up a fight. He's a big guy, it turned out. And he's got these two blokes trying to rob him. And so he puts up a fight, as a lot of people would. You know that he's going to get robbed, and you know he's going to get a beating. It's not a massive leap to imagine, particularly if there's a gun in the house, could escalate very quickly into something very nasty. I mean, how shocked really could you be?
People ask me all the time, they're like, did you know about this gun? I was like, no, I didn't know there was a gun involved until after I got arrested.
Right, but you did know that they had a gun.
No, I didn't know. I did not know.
You told the police that you were aware of the gun a week before.
No, after the fact, after everything happened, of course I knew there was a gun because he was shot and killed three times.
Mm. But you told the police that you were aware a week before there'd been a gun around.
No, I don't remember that. I don't recall that at all because I didn't even know. If I knew there was a gun in the house that I lived in, I would have been in fear for my own life. So I don't want to say that I knew weeks prior to all this that there was a gun in the house. No, that's incorrect.
About 5 minutes ago, you identified a photo of a revolver and you said a person's had that the last week, had the gun. Who's that person?
LeBron.
Okay, do you know his last name?
No, sir.
Okay, and that's the person who has had that gun?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't give a damn who did it. I give a damn about proving they did it.
Well, she told her mother, in her own words, that she set the whole thing up.
Even now, it's like I still don't understand why they shot and killed him. But LeBron had to sit there and kill this young man.
How many bullets were actually fired and how many actually hit Shannon?
It was a six-shot revolver. All six shots were fired. Four struck Shannon Griffin. Three of them went center chest, just a little bit over by the right side of the nipple. One hit through the shoulder and was a through and through. The three that went in the chest stayed. The through and through, when it passed through his body, changed direction and impacted on the building. And there's also where you can see a visible sign back there. That's where we believe the sixth round also impacted.
One of the really perplexing parts of all this is that having shot Shannon dead, these two guys leave the gun at the crime scene.
The fact that they left the murder weapon behind certainly indicates the panic that was going on with them, depending on which one you want to believe left the gun.
As Shannon was left for dead in the alleyway, Jennifer, her boyfriend Lamont, and LeRon fled to an apartment on the other side of the city. They had desperately tried to cover their tracks. Bloodstained clothes were found soaking in bleach. And the murder victim's wallet was found hidden in an air vent.
Jennifer, what are you thinking? You're now on the run with two people who've just killed somebody that you have lured to their death, albeit not thinking he's going to die. But you've lured him to be robbed and beaten, and now he's dead. And you're now on the run with the people who shot him dead.
I had nowhere to go. I was not going to go back to my mom's house and explain to my mom, oh, well, I'm back home because I'm scared for my life now. I'm not going to put my mom in that predicament or danger when she has four other kids.
Were you panicking?
Yes, I was panicking. I mean, who in their right mind would want to stay with somebody that just killed somebody, not knowing what could be next?
Did you sleep with Lamont that night?
I don't even think we slept. I think we were up all night. I was trying to wonder in my head, like, what is going to happen next? What is going to happen next? What is going to happen next? Are they going to try to kill me?
The police eventually catch everybody. You're not initially part of the investigation. They don't think you're involved. But you get interviewed, and in the process of the interview, you...
became involved.
Right. Why did you offer information in that moment?
Believe it or not, when everything was all said and done and we were sitting in the house, LaRon was like, Jennifer, you need to tell them you knew about everything because you're the youngest, you know, you're already famous, you won't get in trouble, so to speak. And I did just that, and here I am now, 6 years later.
They thought you'd get off because you were the hiccup girl.
Yeah, they thought my 15 minutes of fame would help me in a situation, but it didn't.
Ms. Mee's admissions to Detective Warinsky, evidencing her willingness to engage in this violent conduct in this case and her lack of appreciation for the consequences of such conduct, speak for themselves. The only two possible sentences, if she were to be convicted, are the death penalty or life imprisonment.
The severity of the punishment Jennifer faced if found guilty stunned many Americans.
What is going on in the world? She's on trial for murder. Hiccup girl on trial for murder. Take a look at this.
And no one is claiming that she pulled the trigger, but still facing murder charges.
That's right, felony murder. So if she had the intent to commit the robbery and someone dies, she's on trial now for felony murder. So that's all they have to prove in the context of this case is that she had the intent to commit that robbery.
You offered to do her case pro bono, so you wouldn't take a fee for that. Why was that?
It was a very high profile case. She seemed like kind of a cliche, but she seemed like a really nice girl.
When you realized what the police had in this case, particularly statements from all of the people concerned, all identifying Jennifer for her role in luring Shannon to what turned out to be his death, her on tape with her mother saying, I set it up, and so on. From a legal perspective, did that scream guilt to you as the statute of the law applies in Florida?
My concern was, is her involvement was as nearly minimal as you could possibly have to make the threshold for a felony murder type case. And what it really came down to was, did the jury believe that she knew in advance that there was going to be a robbery that was taking place? She didn't have to know there was a homicide that was going to occur, but did she know that there was going to be a robbery?
We're here today and this week because Jennifer Mee set everything up. More correctly, she set up Shannon Griffin for a robbery.
I really have to look no further than her jail phone call. I mean, I've said it in the trial, and I relied on it during the prosecution, that she set the whole thing up. Really, without her, this does not happen.
Why are you in jail for murder in the first degree? Who'd you kill?
I ain't killed nobody. Well, then how are they charging me with murder? Because I set everything up?
But I'm sure for a jury hearing her own words to her own family that I set this up, that it was a robbery, I'm sure that was incredibly compelling for them. It's not a detective, it's not the police saying she said this. It's her telling her mom.
Okay, would the defendant please rise? Madam Clerk, you may publish the verdict.
We, the jury, finds as follows to defendant in this case. Defendant is guilty of murder in the first degree as charged. So say we all.
The jury having found you guilty of murder in the first degree, Miss Mee, I will adjudicate you guilty and sentence you to life in prison without parole.
When she read that, I just... The only thing I remember is turning around and looking at my mom. And I knew right then and there, my life was over.
And for me, that's one of the most troubling aspects about this case. Jennifer will likely never be released from prison, even though she didn't pull the trigger, she wasn't there when it happened, and she didn't know that Shannon would be killed.
I mean, short of hearing your daughter is dead herself, to hear that she has gone to prison in her early 20s for the rest of her natural life, with no possibility of ever having any chance of getting out. It's like losing your child, isn't it, in a way? I mean, of course, you can talk to her.
I've said that multiple times. It's like I lost a child. I died inside. It was really rough. There was a lot of crying.
Did you assume, were you led to believe by the lawyers that she was going to get off?
I believe that even her lawyer thought, you know, that she would get some kind of lighter sentence than what she did. I never once entertained that she would get life without the possibility of parole. Never once I allowed it to cross my mind. I thought 10 years at the very most, good time out in 7, and, you know, she'd be done with that.
John, I practice down here in South Florida. I've handled cases like this. I'm still troubled by the plea bargain, because I'm bothered that she got a life sentence for this, the same way as if she had pulled the trigger. And while legally that's the case, in terms of sentencing, I think it's too harsh. So let's go back to the plea. You offered 15. They said no. What about 18 or 20, just to avoid a life sentence?
One of the big unanswered questions here is why there was no plea bargain deal to stop what has been for her Armageddon.
Absolutely.
Of life without any possibility of parole. Why was there no plea deal?
There were many attempts to try to facilitate one, but in the end, the state took a position, don't even come to us with anything less than starting at 25 years.
You're a very experienced lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the way the prosecution are taking this. They're playing hardball. If she's convicted under the pretext that they're charging her with, she's never coming out of prison. Is it not then your duty to say to her, this is likely to happen, you need to take this deal, even if it's 25 years, even if it's 30 years?
I don't think it's our obligation to say you need to take this deal. I think what we need and what we did do is say, this is what the evidence is against you. This is what they're going to argue. there is a substantial possibility of a conviction in this case, which means you'll get life. It just simply, that didn't come up in that fashion. She was adamant. She wanted to move forward. She was willing to run the risk. It wasn't just myself. All the attorneys involved in this talk with her about that, even during the course of the trial.
There's a theory by those who want to criticize you that, you know, you're a kind of celebrity case ambulance chaser that grabbed a hot case.
Right.
And then took a big punt on your gut feeling that a jury would buy into poor hiccup girl inadvertently caught up in murder and would find for her, which is why you didn't push harder for a deal. That's what people who don't like you say.
Right. And I've heard them say that. And that's fine, but that's not what happened in this case. What happened in this case is she understood, Jennifer clearly understood, that there were options.
If she hadn't been the hiccup girl, she'd just been any other girl who got caught up in this exact murder. Let's play hypotheticals here. What do you think the state may have done in terms of a deal on the years she would serve in prison?
I would say I would have gotten her 10 years or less.
Wow.
Shannon Griffin, he's doing exactly what every 20, 21, 22-year-old male's supposed to do. Work, go meet girls. And he wound up dead.
Jennifer Mee's fame as the hiccup girl affected the public perception and the fact that people were just more shocked that she could be involved in a crime like this, where someone ultimately dies.
I'm personally think some people probably deserve the death penalty. In this case, they don't. They need to live that life out and think about what they've done every day, and to me, that's more of a punishment. If they have a conscience.
You've never been here before, have you?
I have never been.
How do you feel being at the crime scene?
Very nervous inside, knowing that this is where everything happened. Sad, knowing that somebody's life was taken, so many lives were changed. Kind of makes it seem like it's just happened coming back here.
Why do you want to see this?
I don't know why. I just felt compelled to come back this way.
Mm. I mean, this is where Jennifer led Shannon into this corner. This is where the other two men were waiting. This is where Jennifer then walked away.
I do remember this in the crime scene, so he must have been found right.
Yeah, well, Jennifer left. She walked off down there and left. And this is where Shannon was shot dead and where his body was later found.
I don't understand why.
How do you feel standing here?
Very sad. Shannon shouldn't have died. Those things should never have happened. Young man, 22 years old, never got to enjoy life. I wish I could do something to change everything that night. And I know I can't.
I'm sorry for you.
At first, I was like, well, that's justified. They deserve what they got. But then as the years passed, I think I coached Leggett. That's four kids. That's just life is just gone. I mean, you gotta have some kind of compassion for them just as well as Shannon. Not only did they take Shannon's life, they also took theirs too.
Do you feel you deserve to be called a murderer? I know you've been found guilty of first-degree murder, but there will be people watching who, even though they hate what you did, they will think, well, you weren't there. You didn't know he was going to be shot dead. You weren't directly involved in this murder. Why are you here for the rest of your life for murder? I mean, do you feel that a bit?
I don't feel like I should be called a murderer, no. Now, do I feel like I should have gotten time in prison? Yes. The amount of time? No. But then when you actually sit and let it wander through your mind, sometimes I do, because he's never going to be able to see his life. So without him seeing his life, how I feel, even though I wasn't the one who actually pulled the trigger, but because of my co-defendants, I'm just as guilty as they are.
So you come to terms with that?
Yeah. But then also in my mind, you know, there are people that have hearts. There are people that will see. Give her a second chance. Let her be able to, you know, show the world she's not this cold-hearted killer, murderer, whatever people make me out to be.
What are the things that you're saddest about being in here for the rest of your life in terms of what you will now not be able to enjoy?
The saddest thing as of now is, like, I just found out that my sister just had a baby and I'll never see her to grow up.
For a robbery of $60. When you finally met Shannon for the first time that night, because you'd never seen him before, what was your impression of him?
He was very handsome. I don't really remember what he was wearing or nothing like that, but I do remember he was a strong built man. That's all I remember. And I remember he had such flawless features.
Did any part of you in that moment when you physically saw him have any doubt or regret about what was about to happen to him?
Yeah. When I knew I was turning away, that's when it really dropped in, because I was just like, what did I just leave him to? Did I leave him to what's a good word to use? To the wolves, basically. Could I have told him, no, don't go back there, and allowed him to get back on his motorcycle to leave? I wish that I could just have stopped it right then and there.